Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazora, always lit, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 13, Episode 58. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazora, SteelersDepot.com. Glad you guys are back with us here for this Wednesday show, Steelers Nation, as we are wrapping up the Falcons game and setting our sights towards Ravens Week. First time meeting Baltimore this year. That'll be this Sunday, Week 14, in a pretty big game for both sides. Dave, how you doing?
Doing good. Exciting week, right? Who would have thought a couple of weeks ago how big this week 14 game against the Baltimore Ravens would be? I mean, this is a big game. This is a contenders, pretenders type of game. You know, are you going to make a run for the playoffs moving forward from here? Do we need to start looking at the scenarios and what we need to look at is scoreboard watching? All that, I think, will be determined on Sunday this week. And first and foremost, boy, what a memorable day for you. And kind of, you know, we kind of talked about this the other day. What a great find that you had on the Connor Hayward. After the Connor Hayward scored the other day against the Falcons, you were able to quickly track down. I mean, really quick. But at halftime of that game, you had Craig Hayward's first receiving touchdown in the NFL, was able to point out how amazingly, I don't want to say scary, but amazingly similar that touchdown was to Connor Hayward's there. And you posted it on Twitter, and that obviously took off there. And for those that don't know, this morning on Good Morning Football on the NFL Network, Peter Schrager, who does a fine job, I always kind of enjoy Peter's work on there, has a segment called Cool Play, Bro. And Alex, he points out Alex finding that play and kind of showcases that play compared to Connor Hayward's play. So kudos to you, Alex. And in fact, I think Kay Adams, the former host of Good Morning Football, mentioned it on her podcast too, but she didn't shout out your name there, though. So at least NFL Network did. So anyway, knew that was a great find right off the top, and it's good to see you get some recognition for it there.
You guys hear a bunch of camera shutters in the background. That's just the paparazzi lined up here with a big news. No, that was cool, but just dumb luck. I mean, you know how it is. You go down 15 rabbit holes, and most of them don't work out, and the one
you
randomly
don't know.
It's just, you find that. And again, the weirdest part was somebody had just posted that full game for me to pull the clip 12 days ago, and right. So I don't know what compelled somebody to post a full Saints-Rams game from 1991, but maybe there's a little divine intervention working on the internets this weekend.
Yeah, and the KG experience on Twitter was the one that pointed that out, that caught it this morning and tweeted us a clip of them going over the play that Alex had found. So shout out to letting us know there, trying to get Good Morning Football to post that full segment on Twitter. So hopefully by the end of the day, we'll be able to pass the full segment around.
All right, let's talk about stuff people want to hear about here. Let's talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mike Tomlin speaking to the media on Tuesday, of course, detailing the injury report. Not many updates there, pretty nondescript. Talked about the bumps and bruises associated with play to Larry Ogunjobi, to TJ Watt with the ribs, things like that. Real no updates on kicker Chris Boswell or cornerback William Jackson. Both are eligible to be designated to return from injured reserve. We'll see if that happens. Today will be a good day for that to occur, so we'll keep our eyes peeled. But the notable name Tomlin mentioned, Chukwuma Okorafor, with a shoulder injury suffered in that game. Missed a couple of snaps, did finish it out, but Tomlin's saying that, you know, we'll see whether Rhodes lead may affect him early in the week. I imagine he'll play against the Ravens, but that's the most notable name and injury to talk about.
Yeah, you are correct there. And, you know, he mentioned TJ Watt went back to the end of that Colts game and final couple plays in there. I think I found the chip by Jonathan Taylor right into the, it looked like that kind of smarted TJ Watt on that play. Cause I think TJ told the CBS crew there, you know, ahead of the Atlanta game that's, you know, he's kind of smart from that. And if TJ Watt's talking about kind of smarting from a play, I bet that son of a gun hurt, you know, cause that's not something that, you know, he's not one to really talk about injuries and all like that. And, you know, he looked a little, I mean, you know, obviously Atlanta, you had a plan of trying to get the football out and, you know, has a mobile quarterback and able to move the pocket and all like that. He looked a little bit sluggish overall in that game against Atlanta that like he might, you know, still be smarting a little bit from that rib injury, but, you know, another week here now, hopefully they'll take it easy on him on practice. And, you know, hopefully that thing will be behind him pretty good come Sunday against the Ravens.
Yeah, it was a pretty quiet game, but it was quiet for Highsmith. And just point is, you better get ready, get up for Ravens week. And just speaking of injuries here briefly to talk about this, I'm sure we'll discuss it more on Friday previewing this game officially, but very unlikely Lamar Jackson plays in this game with a reportedly PCL sprain suffered in that win over Denver. So it looks like Pittsburgh for the second time saw him in the finale last year. We'll see Tyler Huntley again under center or shotgun, or whatever you want to call it. This Sunday.
Boy, what a break for the Steelers, right? And you know, you don't want to wish, you know, injury on any team. And you know, I'd much rather see my quote unquote my team beat another team at full strength and all like that. But I mean, it you know, this is the cycle of the NFL. This is what happens. Injuries happen, and you know, the line moved tremendously because of this, I think, because, I mean, make no mistake, Lamar Jackson's worth a few points even on the road here. So now we're in a situation where the Steelers are actually favored in this game. This will be Huntley's first start this season, his fifth of his NFL career. I think he's won just one of those other starts. He obviously came in relief of Lamar Jackson against the Broncos on Sunday, and they ended up winning that game, but I didn't put a lot of points on the board. That's for sure. So an interesting kind of twist this week to this game. And as you mentioned, they have faced Huntley. They have prepared for Huntley before. So it's not going to be new from that aspect here. This is just a golden opportunity right now for the Steelers team, as I mentioned at the top here, a game that, you know, you'd probably really, really question whether or not the Steelers could win if Lamar Jackson plays in it, now becomes one that they should have a pretty good chance to win with Huntley under center here.
The Ravens have to be the worst and just most hard luck injury team in football, at least the last 2 years, but this year as well. They were destroyed last year. It's a big reason why they collapsed, including not having Lamar for the final four or five games of that season. But to your point, yeah, for Pittsburgh, it won't be new preparing for Huntley. But as Mike Tomlin pointed out, it won't be new for Huntley preparing for Pittsburgh. And so it kind of works both ways here. But the Ravens offense did very little in that Denver game. It took until the last 30 seconds for them to put their first touchdown on the board, a Huntley rushing touchdown to win that game 10-9. So certainly, as you said, Lamar's worth a couple of points and is a big difference in this game, assuming he does not play.
You know, Huntley fits in what they like to do. It's not like they have to change things, you know, from a schematic standpoint. It's just Lamar. Huntley's not Lamar, especially in escape of betting. He can run now, don't get me wrong, and he's going to run in this game, or at least try to. But I think this is another game where you hit that son of a gun every time with the mesh charge a couple of times, and maybe you get him in situations where he hands that ball off maybe sometimes when he shouldn't on some of those reads, you know.
Not to take the long view of it, but this schedule is looking pretty nice. And I don't want to be someone that gets caught up in that stuff too much, because it's hard to win any game in the NFL. It's one game at a time. But that it's fortunate no Lamar, and then you got what, Carolina and the Raiders. I mean, you know, this team could really finish the season pretty strong.
Look, and that was part of my terrible take yesterday was, you know, don't look now, but here they are. I mean, if I would have told you 4 weeks ago, Alex, that, man, if the Steelers are going to play a Ravens team without, you know, without Lamar Jackson, and if they win this one, if they win that one, then we need to start looking at who needs to lose and what games the Steelers need to win. Not many people would have blamed me, but here we are. I mean, this is the biggest game. In so many words, I mean, they could probably lose one more of these games, but if you want to be direct about it, this, I mean, it's almost like a single elimination right now. Sure. If they win out, you really like their chances to get in the playoffs. If they don't win out, you know, there's a lot of question marks in there, and it really starts this week. I mean, get the win this week, and then, you know, move on. We'll talk about Carolina next week.
Absolutely. You're right. This is one game at a time. You lose to Baltimore, all these conversations come to a screeching halt. But in my head, I thought I'm a big horse racing guy. I'm thinking about Rich Strike in the Derby last year, coming up from behind the last 30 seconds and just somehow overtaking everybody. Pittsburgh's not going to win the AFC North, but that's just kind of in my head about this team. It's just, you know, and again, whenever they were 2-6, we talked about the last two times they were 2-6, they finished each of those seasons 8-8. And so Tomlin, for all his warts and all the criticism, some of that, which is certainly valid, is able to rally his team and never lose that locker room. And again, the schedule is certainly more forgiving. They're not facing the Bills and Eagles and teams like that, but you just have to find a way to rally and at least attempt to right the ship.
Look, I mean, I had him going 8-9 this year. I think you did too, right? Or 9-8? Right.
Both 8-9.
Both 8-9. I mean, there's a very good chance of that happening. And I mean, you win four of your final five here, you go 9-8, right?
Oh, you're making me do math. I was told there'd be no math here on this show. Yeah, it'd be 4-1, be 9-8, yes.
All right, so you go 9-8, and that bumper sticker's back in play again. Never a losing season.
Well, but also the statues, right? You're saying build a statue for Tomlin if they make the playoffs.
Yeah, look, I mean, I put this on Twitter a long time ago. If this team makes the playoffs, yeah, they should build a statue for him outside the stadium. And I think you need to really consider if he gets his team in the playoffs, and then, but I don't think once they get in the playoffs, does that matter with the Coach of the Year award? I don't think it does it, or does it?
In terms of playoff success, does that
right?
Get,
right.
I think it's generally a regular season award.
All right. Well, I mean, if he gets his team in the playoffs, man, I don't know how he doesn't garner some serious Coach of the Year votes, you know?
Yeah, potentially. But let's get to that point in the first place. And
yeah, you gotta win this week. I mean, sure. Look, if they don't win this week, even though they could still run the table out, go 9-8, I mean, it really lessens their chance of making the playoffs and yada, yada. We're back to kind of, you know, wondering if they can run the table, because remember, they got to play Baltimore a few more weeks from now, you know,
right. at Baltimore and then Cleveland to finish things up.
Right. And you have to think from a seeding aspect that maybe Baltimore will still have something, you know, best case scenario here is that you beat Baltimore obviously on Sunday, and maybe they win their next couple and, you know, or, you know, lose a couple in there, and then Kansas City and those other, you know, in other words, the number one seed comes out of play, but they still have home field, where maybe that week 17 game doesn't mean anything to them.
Yeah, I think it would take a lot considering how hotly contested the first place battle is. The Bengals would have to fall apart for the Ravens to have a chance to comfortably be in a good place by week 17. That's unlikely to happen. So I imagine that week 17 game is going to mean a lot to Baltimore. Will it mean a lot to Pittsburgh? We'll see.
Right. I mean, but the fact that we're talking about that right now is quite it's quite impressive, really. I didn't see them being in this thing, really, with this game having this kind of magnitude at this point right now.
Dave, we don't talk about tryout players too often. They happen basically every Tuesday. That's essentially how the NFL works, or at least how Pittsburgh works. Bring guys in on a Tuesday to try out, Rolodex kind of stuff, injuries, just emergency call-ups, things like that. Pittsburgh working out seven players on Tuesday. Probably more to your point. You made this point in the DMs last night that it's probably more of a futures contract look and guys like that, especially when they worked out four long snappers. But some of the more other notable names, position players, include Caleb Ellaby, a quarterback, a rookie, maybe kind of a Lamar Jackson scout team thing. I don't know exactly if that's a thought there that they potentially have. Also, a couple of CFL guys, including Tyson Philpott, who was with the Montreal Alouettes, who's 22 years old, and Kian Schaefer Baker, who was with the Rough Riders. And so a couple of CFL guys, a quarterback, and four long snappers. So just want to mention that because of that pretty long list of tryout players.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does have that kind of that feel to it that that it's futures kind of guys in there right now, especially with all these long snappers, right? I mean, unless something's going on with Christian Kuntz that we don't know about, but the team has already made one move on their practice squad today. Did not include a long snapper. They signed Amiki Agboole to the practice squad, linebacker, and released told people not to get comfortable with Master Teague back on the practice squad. Out goes Master Teague from the practice squad. So that will upset a few people here, but you know, they're back kind of healthy at the running back position. I would imagine it Agboole, a kind of an outside linebacker.
Yeah, I'm actually
edge guy.
Just pulling up the 2019 draft profile that Tom did on him. So again, nice. It's so great to go back to these things. And yeah, 6'2", 245 coming out. Tom liked his hand usage, his violent hands, good first steps. Says needed some work as a tackler, and his pass rush plan was not great. But Houston kid. So yeah, looks like some edge help there.
Yeah, 2019 sixth round draft pick of the Chargers, I think, who originally drafted him. Is that right?
I'm not sure. That sounds right.
Of the Chargers, and you know, hasn't. I think he's seen limited action in the NFL. Most recently of the St. Louis Battlehawks. In the what league was that?
That AAF. Was that XFL? Is that the XFL team? Did he get drafted?
That was XFL. Yeah, that was XFL.
Okay, they haven't played yet, though, but he probably got drafted, and now he's obviously in the NFL.
Right. So, and you would say, okay, well, why is this team signing another outside linebacker to the practice squad? This is probably a sign that TJ Watt needs a couple of days here.
Yeah, he's going to get, I'm sure, a rest day today, along probably with Cam Hayward, Ogunjobi, and others. And so they're going to add some depth there. The running back room now healthy with Warren healthy, Harris good. And so Master Teague will always have the summer of 2022, but probably just that.
And look, he might, you know, Master Teague might be a guy that circles back to a futures.
Yeah, he could. I mean, again, he had a good summer. He was running hard and had an ankle sprain or whatever it was. And that's unfortunate for him. So he'll resurface somewhere, I'm sure.
All right, we're circling back to where we were before the move there.
The other workouts, and again, four long snappers. The most notable name there, not that I'm the long snapping expert, but Thomas Fletcher was the top long snapper whenever he came out. He actually got drafted by Carolina. He has really good length, 34-inch arms. And length and size matters less these days for long snappers because there's so many rules protecting those guys, but it's still nice to have overall. So he's a pedigree long snapper, if there is such a thing.
Okay.
All right, moving on to Mike Tomlin, and again, mentioned the injury report there. The big conversation that Tomlin had that's dominating some of the headlines here is his response to George Pickens' frustrations during that game against the Falcons. Obviously, cameras following Pickens pretty closely, getting upset for not being involved in the offense, and a lot of criticism for Pickens in that sense. Mike Tomlin pushing back on it, a big long kind of monologue about responding to that. Let me just read part of what Mike Tomlin said. He says, quote, "I'd rather say whoa than sick him. I want a guy that wants to be a significant part of what we do. Now the appropriate and professional and mature way to express that we're growing and working on, and that will continue. But that spirit, that competitive spirit, nah, I want that guy," went on to say, for a guy who wants to do that, referring to Pickens wanting to step up and deliver and make plays, Tomlin saying, quote, I'm not going to make that a negative, no matter how silly I think the commentary is or people talking about him expressing frustrations and stuff and trying to make it a negative storyline. I laugh at that. And so Mike Tomlin very much pushing back. I've concluded the statement there by saying, we're capable of tuning that BS out. And so Tomlin basically saying this is a non-story.
Look, I'll say it once again. I think that in so many words, Tomlin said, you know, the way he go, I don't have a problem with the way that him wanting the ball. Okay. And there's going to be some frustration from time to time on the field, throwing the hands up. I mean, look, we saw Claypool do that several times earlier this season, right? Throw me, yeah, I'm open. Throw me the ball. Some of his body language. I mean, and Deontay Johnson, we've seen that as well too. It's just when it boils over to where it's very visible like that, the camera's already now a couple of weeks in a row kind of focused in on this, and then you have media guys taking pictures on the sidelines of Deontay, and then you had the TV camera showing Cameron Hayward over there kneeled down trying to talk to the kid and all like that. I don't have a problem with the kid, you know, the competitive Nate spirit of this and him wanting the ball. What I have problems with is that week in, week out, you know, yelling at your coaches or whoever, we don't know who he was yelling at, but it might have been just in general,
right?
You know, whoever can hear me, throw me the effing ball, you know.
But this is the only week he's been yelling, right? Last week or against the Colts, he was just kind of head held low because he had dropped a couple of passes. He wasn't yelling at anybody.
Okay, well, I mean, it's a couple of weeks in a row we're talking about it, right? My whole angle on this is, okay, we know you want the ball here. Just, you know, let's go about a better way of you showing that you want the football other than getting caught yelling on the sideline like that.
Right, as Tom
was. And then if you're going to do that, you're going to get caught doing that, then answer the damn questions after the game's over.
Yeah, we still disagree with that. I don't think Pickens has no control over if the camera's captured or not. And if you're frustrated, you don't want to, you know, say the wrong thing and get poked and prodded because you're going to get 40 questions about why.
He's still going to have to answer those questions later this week, right?
But I'm sure he's cooled down, right? When you're hot and heated after the game, you're not in that safe space right now. No, there's a difference between that's why there's a cool down period in general. And certainly guys can still be really heated coming right off the game.
I mean, he's already, you know, gotten calmed down by Cam at that point. You're in the locker room. He should be cooled down by that amount of time.
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I don't know if Cam's words even worked if it calmed him down. I mean, I don't think it did because I think he was yelling after Cam spoke to him. I don't remember the whole timeline. Look, there. I mean,
I don't have a problem with him, you know, wanting the football. Okay, just. The more visible that this becomes, though, the more it is, like it or not, the more it's going to become a BS story.
Sure.
Right? Tomlin says, this is all BS, tune it out. Well, that makes you want to magnify on it even more because he says, trying to make it it's blood in the water right now, you know? Sure. And it's a very easy target, and it'll be an even easier target if the next one comes in a loss,
right. And you can bet
where he catches three balls or two balls for 17, 16 yards or whatnot, you know,
and to my point, into the concern that I had was this is going to happen again this year for Pickens. It's going to be a dud game because you're playing in a run heavy offense,
sure.
And you know, you're a vertical receiver that's already kind of feast famine. So he's going to have to learn to understand there's going to be ebbs and flows. Not every single game is going to be a big game for him. And to your point, I mean, you can bank 5 minutes in that Ravens game, they're going to talk about this moment with George Pickens. They're going to flash back to it. They're going to do all that kind of stuff and highlight it. And you don't want this to be a repeated kind of thing. But a guy,
and that's my point.
I understand, but the principle of a guy getting mad during a game, it happens all the time. So I just want to watch for it. It's a teach moment, but I don't want to make too much out of it because this is a thing that's happened to all the receivers this year: Deontay, Claypool, and now Pickens, and it happens pretty commonly across the NFL.
Sure. And what I'm warning people about is you keep this kind of stuff up, and then the next time, you know, one of these, you know, hopefully there's not one of these times, but you get thrown one in the end zone in a key moment and he drops it or don't make the catch or something like that. Well, then the whole thing's going to turn, the worm's going to turn in the apple here, you know, on it. So I don't have a problem, you know, because all of them want the football, right? you know?
Right. That's in their DNA. It's why they're receivers.
Throw me the damn ball is Keyshawn Johnson. But, man, there's got to be a better way of expressing it, you know? And now he's an easy mark right now at this point. And you can bet if he does it again, and he's, you know, how, and it's going to probably going to happen again, it's going to be easy for the cameras to focus on.
So let me ask you this. Did you like Tomlin's response, or do you think that
I thought it was fine. If you read this slowly and parse it slowly, he was on both sides of this, right? Tomlin was. He was, look, I don't want to, I want players out there that want the football, right? I don't want to depress the competitive spirit nature with this guy wanting the football and wanting to help the team win. But there is a however comma in there, right?
A little bit. I mean, it was mostly a defense of Pickens, but there was the comment of we're going to, you know, a teach moment. But right. I think generally this is a pretty clear defense of George Pickens.
Right. But I mean, there was a however comma in there. Now, the appropriate and professional and mature way to express that comma, we're growing and working on comma, and we will continue.
Right. Yeah. I mean, obviously you don't want this to happen every week. That's not the right way to handle some of that stuff. You understand the emotions of the game. And again, this is still a rookie. This is still a 22-year-old kid. I mean, he's had a good season, had a lot of success, and you're dealing with some struggles. And hopefully this is just a teach moment for George Pickens.
Yeah. And I'm sure this will all come off with Dave hates George Pickens like he hates the other 52 guys on the roster. And that's not what I think. The guy's incredibly talented. I think he's got a great future ahead of him. But I am 54 years old and I have seen this kind of stuff many times over the years, right? You know, right. And and I've seen how it's been covered from the media aspect of it since 2008, this will get magnified if it keeps up, and it will turn more and more into a negative thing for him. So my point is, man, just be cognizant of how you're being, that you are a focal point now, and be careful how you express, you know, your emotions on the field in these situations.
Right. No, I think you're 100% right about that. And the biggest takeaway, even if Tomlin believes, and I know that he does, it's a BS media story, the cameras are always going to be on George Pickens. And so you better recognize that fact, understand that whatever you do potentially is going to get magnified and replayed a million times over. It's like, once you send a text message, you're assuming that thing's going to be in the public sphere forever. Like, that could get out. And so you better make sure you're always, you know, talking with that in mind, and just in the way on the field, your actions are always going to be potentially on camera. And so you better act as if that you're always on the camera.
Right. And now that Tomlin has said, I'm not going to make it a negative, and then he's called it something that could be potential BS. Once again, that's that makes you want to magnify on it more, you know, not that he shouldn't have said all that. I mean, I appreciate the way, what he said and the way he said it, and with there being a however comma in there, but the fact that this is now a talking point, it's going to remain something that's easy to focus on.
Right.
Like it or not. I mean,
and Tomlin knows that, but I think he was doing that because he wanted to make it very clear to George Pickens, he had his back and he was defending. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And once again, I don't have any problem with Pickens wanting the football here. And it's easy, and Pickens will have a lot of people support. You know, the anti-Canada people right now are saying, yeah, tell them, George, fire Canada. That's why you ain't getting this thing. But this keeps up, and it's going to be – the worm's going to turn, and it's going to turn back on Pickens here.
Sure, absolutely. So – those are the comments there from Tomlin on Pickens. What else did Mike Tomlin have to say that you thought was relevant and interesting?
Let's see here. You know, just talking about, I'm trying to roll through this real quick here. I thought the way he handled the whole talking about Tyler Huntley was good. And, you know, much in the same way, and I'm paraphrasing here, much in the same way we talk about Kenny Pickett and the experience, you know, playing a role in his development positively, the same can be said about Huntley. And this isn't a new, you know, this isn't the first rodeo for Huntley. in this. And as I mentioned, this will be what is his fifth career start and first this year. And because he either made four or five previous ones in there as well, too. So I just thought how he framed that and basically saying, don't sleep on this guy.
Yeah, he'll be a threat for sure. I mean, that was a close game they played last year, 16-13, came down to the wire. And so Steelers Ravens in general is almost always close one possession games, whether it's Lamar, whether it's RG3, whether it's whoever. And this weekend will probably be the same story.
I don't know if you hit on it. Maybe you did hit on it. You know, talking about the guys eligible to come off IR, Chris Boswell and William Jackson. You have to think, what's today? Boswell, you think the window gets open. Probably the window gets open on both of them today. But sure. within that, I still don't like the chances of William Jackson being back on the 53 come Saturday. I like it more so. I mean, I suppose if William Jackson's ready, I mean, do you let Josh Jackson go?
He's been hanging out on Josh Jackson's been able to hang on for as long as he can. We'll see. I mean, I don't know. I'm just kind of taking it day by day. Let's see if they, because if Jackson doesn't return to practice today, then he's not going to play this weekend. We can safely assume that. So we'll take it day by day and go from there.
I think the odds are kind of against Jackson being back on the 53 by Saturday. Yeah. Boswell's a no-brainer. If he can go out there and kick, he can kick, you know.
Right. Plus, I mean, even if Jackson does practice, this guy hasn't played in the game since week five. He needs some time for conditioning and, you know, getting the system and things like that. So new system, hasn't played in 2 months, whatever it is.
He's only practiced one time with this team, right?
One practice. So I find it very unlikely he's going to play against the Ravens on Sunday.
So don't, I mean, keep the run the window as long as you can with him until he's ready.
Yeah. Speaking of kicking, Mike Tomlin offering his thoughts on kicking. It's very much like mine. Put the ball through the uprights. Don't really care how it happens. He says of Matthew Wright, that one doink that he had back to back doinks for Matthew Wright. I'm not a technical teacher as it pertains to field goal kicking. I'm responsible for everything, but I don't have direct experience. I don't know how to kick. I'm not very good at it. I appreciate the ball going through the upright. That does imply when Tomlin says he's not very good at it, that he has tried to kick before. And I want to see that footage. But bottom line is Wright's done well, but assuming Buzz was healthy, Wright will not be the kicker this weekend.
Hey, if this team somehow manages, you know, to get into the playoffs, if they manage to get in there, Matthew Wright will be a forgotten name along the journey here. That shouldn't be, because a lot of these points have come off the leg of Matthew Wright in this in these last three or four games, right? So kudos to him for filling in the way that he has. And once again, if this team ends up making the playoffs, don't forget the contributions that Matthew Wright made.
I very much look forward to, in the summer of 2026, my Let's Remember Some Steelers series will be on Matthew Wright. So we'll talk about him 4 years from now. But yeah, I mean, he's done well. Again, what he did on kickoffs in this game, the placement, accuracy, really tough to do. Yeah, really. That was as valuable as his actual field goals. And of course, it all was valuable to sneak out with that victory.
And I think we discussed that in on Monday, right? And we let off with that, with the special teams, what a good job that they did. And look, you kept the football out of Cordell Barrett Patterson's hands. And on the returns that they did have, they weren't, you know, big ones. And then you had a couple of touchbacks in there on top of it. So the game planning was on point and the execution of it was on point as well, too. And then, you know, the kid made some kicks as well, too, and they ended up winning the game.
Yeah, I mean, he's a smart guy. Maybe those doinks are on purpose. He was an aerospace engineer, I believe. He was like Josh Dobbs, so he's a smart guy. That maybe has that down to a science.
Thoughts on comments on Levi Wallace and Cam Sutton?
Yeah, not surprising. Called them both heady players, good above the neck guys. I mean, that's kind of how I've described them as well. They're not athletically super gifted. They're not, you know, height, weight, speed marvels or anything like that. They're not, you know, Sertans or, you know, Jalen Ramsey's or anything like that, but they're really smart guys that have been playing the ball well, reading routes well. And I thought Sutton played a heck of a game. I thought he had an underrated performance in that one as an open field tackler, making plays on the football, just communication, playing inside, playing outside. So getting pressure. I just thought, you know, good games for both those guys.
Obviously praising Cameron Hayward for, and you know, that's something we haven't mentioned there. Congrats to Cameron Hayward for being once again the Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee for the Steelers here. Man, hasn't it been more than two times he's been, it feels like he's been nominated.
I think someone said five. I don't know where I saw that.
Okay. I know this is back to back years, but it feels like it's been like for like every year for like the past 5 years, right? Yeah, at least to me, it does. But man, it'd be nice to, and look, they're all deserving. So, you know, some of these things that these guys do around the league, obviously, and that's what the nomination, the award's for. It'd be nice to see Cam win it, though. I gotta admit, you know, maybe this will be the year.
I would love it to. I don't know how many times. It's at least two. Maybe I'm misremembering the five or just saying that incorrectly, but hopefully he's done so much good work for the community and just one of those guys that, and it can be cliche sometimes, but really just embodies what it means to be a Steeler, both on and off the field. To me, for my money, you know, in the area that I've grown up in, one of the greatest Steelers of his time. Right. And he may never get quite into that stratosphere that Joe Green's at, but man, he is not far behind and he's about to match Joe Green's career sack number. I think he's five behind that. And so just an incredible player in person in Pittsburgh. Very lucky to have him.
All right. I think we recapped enough of Tomlin there. And you know, look, we're kind of different opinions on what's happening with Pickens here. So in certain aspects. But anyway, we'll see how that plays out.
From Pickens to Pickett, you had done some more stats on Kenny Pickett. I have no idea what these stats even are, I don't think. So take it away. What is your thoughts on Kenny Pickett?
Yeah, I just think in general here, and he has obviously made some strides, I think, in his game. I think you would obviously agree with that as well, too. I think the Colts game was better than the Falcons game, top to bottom. I think there's a couple throws probably could have been obviously better in here. It goes without saying, though, and people are going to hate that I keep boiling it down to a couple of these stats here, but he has got to start pushing the football down the field more, plain and simple. And just looking at the stat that I always like to bring up is the adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat when it comes to this kind of stuff, because this takes into account passing yardage. It takes into account sacks, touchdowns, interceptions, you know, yardage and all like that. And like it or not, it is a very good measurement of where a quarterback is currently in his career. And right now his adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat is five in the, and I wanted to take a snapshot of the last four games, right? Because I want to see, we all know that, you know, he had those eight interceptions kind of early there. So I wanted to kind of pick up where that last, you know, bad game left off with him. I wanted to really look at what he's done over the last four games, and he has completed 79 of 128 pass attempts, no interceptions in that string, and that's absolutely phenomenal. The status of this team right now, you are not going to win games if you turn the football over right now, and he's not doing that. However, 835 yards, just two touchdowns. He's been sacked 11 times for 76 yards there. His adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat off of those four games alone is 5.75, right? It's obviously a lot better than it was through those first handful of games there. I mean, we're talking sub four in that number. But this number absolutely has got to climb it. You know, the minimum we need to see this number here real soon is 6.4 area. Right?
I assume this number ranks pretty low league wide. Are you doing any sort of comparison?
Here's what I did, Alex. Okay. I wanted to look at how he compares league wide. They just posted your cool plays, bro segment on Twitter. So if you go to at Steelers Depot on Twitter. You will see the full video, Cool Plays Bro, which Schrager breaks down the coolest plays of week 13. And within that is Alex Kozora getting a shout out. So
the only time the words cool and Alex Kozora will ever be in the same sentence. So we'll take it. Anyway,
I wanted to look at where Kenny ranks league-wide in the last four games, each of these quarterbacks around, because obviously there's been some buys in there, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to see where he ranks in his adjusted net yards for passing attempt stat based on other quarterbacks with, you know, I think it was 75 or more. I forget what the completion or what the attempts are. You know, in other words, getting a sample size, and I came up with 25 quarterbacks that have had enough attempts and all like that. Of those 26 quarterbacks, Kenny Pickett ranks 19th in adjusted net yards per passing attempt, right? Okay. He is higher than Tom Brady, just barely. Tom Brady, 5.73 versus Kenny Pickett, 5.75. Now, if you want to use Tom Brady as a measuring stick this year, have at it. But it hasn't been great for Tom Brady, right? He's right there too, just slightly above Lamar Jackson as well too. Lamar Jackson, 5.73. But you look at who has been. Let's read off the top five in the last four games when it comes to adjusted net yards for passing attempt. That'd be Patrick Mahomes at 9.01. Wow. Tua at 8.88. Joe Burrow, 8.3. Jimmy Garoppolo, 8.17. Jared Goff. Ooh, who would have thought that name been in there? 7.79. And then even in sixth place, Geno Smith, 7.79. I wanted to play around with the numbers while I had the formula in here as to what it would have take in these last four games for Kenny Pickett to get up into, like, say, that 6.22 numbers. So let's add in 200 yards passing to his game over the last four. That would get him to 7.19. So what's 200 yards over the last four games? It's 50 more yards passing per game, right?
Right.
All right. That's one way to have gotten it to get it higher there, which obviously if it's on the same amount of attempts, you're going to have to probably push the football down the field a little bit more. Let's give him double the touchdowns that he had to four and leave the yardage alone. That wouldn't do it. That would get him to 6.01 in that area there. Let's throw him up two more touchdowns to four and increase his passing yards by just 100 instead of 200. That would get him at 6.76, which would be, you know, more where we'd probably like to see him at this point here. People say, man, you spend too much time on that stat, but it's such a huge stat. Now, let me flip things over here to Kenny Pickett and attempts of more than 10 air yards down the field. Okay. We've talked quite a bit about where are the areas that we want to see Kenny Pickett get better at, right? And it's pushing the football down the field and it's red zone. Am I missing anything?
No, you're dead on.
All right. Kenny Pickett on throws of 10 or more than 10 air yards down the field. So the ball has to travel at least 11 yards or more past the line of scrimmage here to be in this stat. He hit, and I, the minimum I put on this attempt wise, I think was 50, I think it was. So to be on this list of quarterbacks, you need to have attempted 50 or more passes that flew more than 10 yards past the line of scrimmage.
Okay, hit me.
36% completion percentage.
And again, I'm the relativity man. Where does that rank?
Last.
Oh, okay. Not good. out of how many quarterbacks?
34.
All right.
34 quarterbacks here. So now, has there been some drops? Yes. Has there been, you know, a couple that was just off? Yeah. But I mean, the fact of the matter is here, he has completed just 36% of 75 throws. All right. So he's right in the middle of the sample size, because I told you I was going to take a cutoff of 50. Here. And I think the most in here was what, 124 for, let's see, 127 for Derek, 133 for Tom Brady. Looks like Tom Brady might lead the list here in attempts of more than 10 yards down the field this season here. So
what about the same sample size since the bye to try to make everything apples to apples? Because obviously the start of the year was pretty rough. I just wonder if it's gotten better, because progression is the thing we talk about when we talk about Kenny Pickett.
Okay. That's a good question here. And if you'll give me just a moment to log in and log back out.
I mean, I imagine it's probably still
this
not
data,
great.
This data, by the way, comes from Sports Info Solutions, and some of the best to do it, you know, as far as, you know, aggregating this data. They're expensive, but they are Sports Info Solutions as well. Well, worth it if you're into this kind of stuff. Let's see here. I want to look at week. What's the week range there?
That would have been week 10 to week 13 would be the post bye.
That'd be 10, Steelers. 11, 12. That'd be four games, right?
For Pittsburgh, yes. Now, some teams are on bye. Some teams may have three, right. but that'd be the 4 weeks of range.
And we want to see air yard selector of 11 or more.
It was 36% on the season. I just want to see what it's like. I bet you it's been higher. I don't know how much higher. I bet there's been some improvement. I hope there's some improvement. It's hard to be worse than that.
Let me narrow it down to just the Steelers here real quick.
Yeah, even if it's just Pickett. I mean, you can look at it league-wide, but just to get the Pickett number.
32 attempts, 37.5% completion percentage.
Mm-hmm. It's better, but it's not much better.
And whereas I said it was 36% on the other.
Yeah. So he's probably sitting at 35% before the bye. Now he's 37.5%, you know, post bye. So a small improvement, but pretty insignificant overall.
All right. Now people get on and say, boy, you guys dance all over the place when it comes to Kenny Pickett. Well, we've said this several times. We want to see the progression. We want to sit back and watch. We don't want to draw any hard conclusions yet until we see him play more games. Well, I will tell you this right now, at this point, we need to, in these final four or five games, I think we need to see him start pushing the football down the field. People say, well, that's on Matt Canada. No, he has attempted 32. How does this stack up league? Okay. Let's look at what this looks like kind of on an average in these last four games of who's leading the league in such attempts from now. Obviously some of these quarterbacks, you know, a few of them probably going to be on buys in here or whatnot. Kirk Cousins leads the league in those in from week 10 to week 13 in throws of more than 10 yards down the field with 45. Kenny Pickett is, how many did I say?
He had 32.
So he's not, I mean, not too far off the, you know, off the pace there. You have, Jimmy Garoppolo has had 20. Lamar Jackson has had 22. Mac Jones has had 23. Daniel Jones has had 28. Jalen Hurts has had 30. So he's had two more even than Jalen Hurts. The Eagles hadn't had a buy-in. Or did they have a buy-in there in the last 4 weeks?
I can check. I'm not sure. But, I mean, point is, you know, it's Pickett's trying to do it. I mean, right. The attempts are not low. Right. No, the Eagles had their bye in week 7, so they played the full amount of games.
All right, so, I mean, as far as actual attempts being made, those are there, right?
Yeah, my question was going to be, you know, is he getting the right looks? But it feels like he's at least pushing the ball. Now, that's just 10-plus, right? I don't know what's 20-plus and stuff like that. I know Atlanta, right, for example, they really weren't giving the deep ball a lot in that game. They were playing loose zone. They were playing it off. They didn't want to get deep. And so you just wonder, you know, obviously any for Pickett to succeed, he needs yards per attempt and those adjusted numbers to be better than where they're at now. No quarterback's going to succeed when you're having those kind of numbers longer term. But I just wonder, based off the tape, are there things there that he's missing, or is it just where he's not seeing it, or is he just inaccurate, or guys not making plays, or what is maybe the football cause of the issue?
All right, let me throw this at you. You talk about 20 or more yards down the field. All right, in the last four games, 15 attempts for Kenny. His completion percentage is actually better the further he throws it down the field. 46.7% completion on 15 throws. Now, where does
he's
that
completed seven of those, I'm guessing?
He seven has completed 15. Hold on a minute here.
I think the math is doing it top of my head. 46%, 7 of 15. That makes sense.
Where is he on this list real quick here? Completion. Where is it?
Yeah, it's 7 of 15. It's 46.6%. So, I mean, I bet you that's probably pretty good across the league. 20 plus, 40, almost 50% completion rate.
Okay, yeah. He has 7 for 201 yards.
That's a George Pickens effect.
And a touchdown.
Yeah, so... Again, it's a mixed bag. We'll keep watching. We'll keep studying it.
What my point is here overall is we have to see him be able to connect down the field more on passes of 11 yards further past the line of scrimmage. And like it or not, can you win with a quarterback with an adjusted net yards per passing attempt number of under 6.5? You can win some games. But you better have a damn good defense on the other side. I mean, a damn good defense on the other side if you're going to win 10 or 11 games, 12 games in the season that way. If not, and the stats been proven time and time again, you better have a quarterback with an adjusted net yards passing attempt number of around 6.9 at a minimum.
Right, especially when you're facing these AFC quarterbacks that are putting up big numbers, Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, et cetera, et cetera.
So, look, it serves as a warning sign right now. It's not, not saying that this number can't go up, but just know that even in the progress that he's made in these last four games, there's a ways to go.
Right. I think for me, I still think red zone and finishing these drives is bigger than completing downfield. I think both are important, but I think the team has to finish these drives.
Right. But, and that would, I mean, especially if he finishes, because I mean, three times out of four, they're probably going to be finished with a touchdown pass more than likely. Right.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
Three out of four times, probably if drives are going to be finished, they're going to be finished with a touchdown pass versus a run.
Yeah. I don't know the math, but we'll go with that.
So, I mean, you throw in a couple more touchdown passes in there and 100, like I said, 25 more yards per game, that gets you up into that 7 range. It might not seem like it's that big of a distance, but it is,
Yeah, it's pretty big. I want to just very quickly pull up the red zone stats. I know Pickett was the worst quarterback in the red zone a couple weeks ago when we spoke. I imagine it probably hasn't changed dramatically since, and I'm going to use a little antiquated stat when it comes to quarterback rating, but it's just a quick number to kind of give some context to it. And it looks like Mike White is lower on 19 attempts, still a smaller sample size, but of guys of say 25 attempts or more, Pickett is still last, although Josh Allen is still just above him. So Allen has weirdly struggled there, but Pickett's red zone numbers have not been good enough.
Right. And like we said, finishing drives, the two biggest things, I think, look, he's poised. He's got accuracy. It feels like he's picking up what he's seeing across from him. He's got mobility. He's got, his pocket poise has been okay. Looks like he's going through his reads a little bit better. Now let's start seeing some of these other things that we've been talking about, pushing the ball down the field and finishing these drives. Because look, if you can change complexions of games by hitting some of these things, especially in the first half, you know, and finishing some of these drives with touchdowns instead of field goals. You let teams hang around like they did against the Falcons. They're able to continue to do what their MO is, and you're not getting them out of games. You can make your defense better by scoring more points, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, that Falcons game should have never been as close as it was. It should have never been coming down to the very end. In Pittsburgh's inability to finish was the reason why that game remained competitive. So speaking of that Falcons game, have some time here to talk about the All-22. You and I have now digested and watched the entire All-22 from the Steelers-Falcons game. Let's start with the Steelers offense and Kenny Pickett and this group in general. What are your takeaways when it comes to the All-22 with this offense?
I thought the offensive line did a fantastic job, first and foremost. And second note in that is not it confirms what I think I said the other day. That, this was easily Najee's best game of the year from a running standpoint, from a yards after first contact standpoint, everything. And quite honestly, I mean, he obviously had some good games last season there. I think from a totality standpoint, this one ranks right on up. It's definitely his best game in 2022, I thought. And I think it really rivals a lot of the better games that he had in 2021 overall. He looked a lot more decisive with what he wanted to do. And then it looked like and look, he could have even had more on that one zone read that Kenny kept. Man, you look at the end zone, that split open like a ripe old melon, didn't it?
And that's probably a touchdown.
That's probably a touchdown if he gives that ball to, because it's one arm tackle and a safety. Then I think
I don't know why Pickett kept the ball. He's got his corner blitzing off the edge. I don't know. That's just a mental error.
Right. So. But I think that stood out the most from me. I thought Kenny was okay in this game. You go back through and some of these throws I think he should have made. And once again, to me, it was okay. I thought the Colts game was much better for him.
Yeah, I'm with you. But I think overall, just a very good ground attack, consistently got yards. Najee ran extremely hard. All the backs I thought played well in this game.
Tight ends on the end of the line blocked a little bit better.
Yeah, Gentry, Freiermuth, I thought did better. Gentry was an asset. I thought Connor Hayward, touchdown aside, I thought he had some good blocks on. You mentioned those cut blocks. I saw those. Yeah, split zone blocks. I mean, that was good. He should have been maybe called for the one penalty on that kind of crackback block at the end of that one Deontay catch. But good game for him. Good game for the line. Whether you're talking about Dotson was better, Cole I thought played well. James Daniels has really come on strong overall. Dan Moore still, if Dan Moore could ever figure out how to deal better with bull rushes and power rushes, if he could anchor better and use his hands better, he'd be a top 10 left tackle easily. That's the last thing he has to clear. It's been a challenge for him since his rookie season last year. So still working on that. And definitely you can see that defensive ends, they see that on tape and they are challenging him with bull rushes a lot more than they have.
He's using his hands better at least.
Oh yeah. His independent hand use. He was a two-hand puncher this summer. Generally speaking, Pat Meyer teaches independent hand use. So not punching with two hands or different levels and you're shooting your right hand and stuff like that. He's gotten good at that, but still has to work on a little bit of placement and strike and power. Cause when he tries to punch and he misses, he's too high with his hands. That's when he gets walked back and he loses leverage and loses control of the block.
Right.
Anything else with the offense? I think, it was just a very old school, you know, ground attack kind of game. So, I just thought Najee, I mean, yeah, what would you, it's hard to rank these things, but I think maybe the Browns game last year was his best game, week 17 won, and maybe this one in the second place.
I mean, just on a totality type, totality of all runs in a game type situation, to me, this one was up there with that. I was very impressed with the way he ran, and especially after, look, there were yards given to him before contact, and I think that's where the offensive line gets some praise here. But there was what did PFF even have for him after yards after contact in this game? I mean, I
think the broadcast said he had 40 of his 86 were after contact. Yeah, I mean, he got more than what was blocked.
I mean, so I mean that, and that's obviously what you want, you know. Now, yeah, look, me and explosive run. I think they're doing it. And I said this the other day, I think they're doing an excellent job. I would like to see kind of this more of a committee approach. I don't think it should be all on Najee. I think Benny Snell gives you a certain aspect that you can use right now behind this line. And obviously Jaylen Warren is a guy that has a layer of explosiveness to him that you're not afraid to hand him the ball or use him to block in all situations. You've got three backs right now that technically can play any down, I think.
Yeah, I think Snell is going to carve out a role. I think Harris' snap count was 66% in this game, which is the lowest he's played in games that he's not been hurt or blowouts or things like that. And that's still a heavy amount of snaps for him, but it's keeping him fresh. I think him being fresh is important, too. And I think, you know, we talked about the power in this game. I thought the vision that he showed in this game was fantastic. And I think he has more confidence cutting now. He was, you know, dancing a bit more. Now he's really making a hard one cut and then finding the hole and getting downhill. So I thought his vision in this game on some of those zone runs was just as impressive.
PFF has Najee 45 yards after contact in this game. Benny Snell had 17 after contact on his few carries there. Like I said, I'd like to see them kind of rotate some of these guys around a little bit more. I think you get don't wear them down, you know, especially this time of year. You know,
yeah, I thought they had a really good plan against the Falcons, and they won't always be able to run the ball 37 times. And so being consistently ahead helps some of those things. I'm going to write about this later this week as kind of one of my Friday-ish commentary posts. I think Eddie Faulkner's done a good job with this room, with Najee, with Jaylen Warren, having, you know, with Ant Mac last week for the Colts game. The ball security these guys have shown throughout Faulkner's time, that's something he really preaches. They work extremely hard at every single practice, ball security drills in training camp. I think Faulkner's done a nice job with this group.
All right. I did not like the gunner, one of those gunner end around, especially when Kenny had a block in it. People say, well, I got a nasty email this week, but in so many words, it said, you stupid idiot. How can you say that Matt Canada called a good game when this team only scored 19 points? You know, I think an R word was used in there to describe me, or anyway, it was a real nasty email saying you don't know football because the Steelers scored 19 points and yet you're saying Matt Canada called a good game.
Yeah, I mean, this just goes back to, you can call a good game and your offense not produce, or you can call a bad game and your offense does produce. It's a matter of execution versus play calls. And, you know, people want to offer specific reasons why they think, you know, Canada didn't call a good game. I'm all ears. I've certainly done that throughout this year. And of course, you want to score more than 19 points. But to me, I'm seeing a lot of player execution. Deontay catches that pass on third down. That's a touchdown right there. I mean, how many drives they stalled out? Red zone fringe, in the red zone itself.
What about the Kenny throw to Fryermuth
should have been a touchdown. Easy touchdown. I mean, that was just a bad miss by Kenny Pickett there. So you had so many. That's not on Canada. I mean, I'm sorry to say. Listen, we've been critical of Canada. We talked about the issues. I think we're being fair to the guy. Lately, the issues have been less on him and more on just the players not finishing plays, not finishing drives, not executing.
Now, some will say, well, look, them not executing is because of coaching. So that goes back to Canada.
Well, really, that should go back more to the positional coaches in terms of the execution, because the positional coaches are the one teaching technique and going through drills and things like that.
I just think from a raw play calling standpoint, look, I'm not trying to put this guy, I'm not stumping for this guy, but people expect us to do this thing the way we've always done it. And that's criticize, praise, or, you know, be right down the middle on other stuff, or say, I don't know, when we don't know. To me, I feel the last couple of games, there's five or six plays in each of these games. I can say, yikes, I don't know about that. But the whole second and long runs thing, you know, I think for what that Falcons game was, other than putting points on the board and execution, I thought he called an okay game.
Yeah, I wasn't displeased with it overall. Last note on George Pickens, I'm going to do hopefully a breakdown and article for tomorrow, for Thursday, on Steelers Depot about why I thought George Pickens didn't get the ball. I think there's a couple of reasons for it, but it didn't feel like he was running wide open and Kenny was missing him most of the time. I think it was just a couple different things working that led to Pickens not really being involved.
Address that further a little bit. So people, because I heard another blogger on the radio just butcher it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's one clean answer, and I want to save some of the stuff for the article. But A, They didn't throw the ball a ton in this game. Pickens only, I think, ran 31 routes. He played a season low in terms of his snap count because they ran so many heavy sets, and Deontay is more the every down guy. He's the X receiver, and so he's going to be the kind of de facto number one receiver in terms of how this offense is run. And so just off the top, there wasn't a lot of opportunity there. You combine that with Pickens playing in the slot more, which was I'm trying to remember the numbers here on that. He played in the slot more, didn't get to run some of his outside routes as much. But whenever he was outside and he ran a lot of vertical routes, the Falcons were playing loose zone coverage. They really weren't trying to allow a lot over their head. They're well aware of what Pickens can do. And then last thing, the numbers don't break incredibly cleanly, but Pickens, I think it was, what are the numbers here? 70-something percent of the time he lined up to the field side. And Kenny Pickett threw to the boundary most of this game. He's kind of likes the boundary a bit more. It's a shorter throw for him to make. And so I'll have some numbers on that to show that because Pickens was to the field side more often and Pickens was throwing the boundary more often, just weren't a lot of looks for him in those scenarios.
All right. How would you go about trying to force targets to Pickens, or would you?
Well, I mean, I understand, you know, there's always game plans and there's things you can do to scheme guys up and get them the football the way they did Deontay against the Colts. But I mean, I'm not going to try to force it in the sense of this guy has to have 10 targets against the Ravens.
That's what people want.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's things you can do and, you know, you can use more bunt sets. That's been used pretty effectively. But again, I just understand it's the ebb and flow of the system of this run heavy offense with a rookie quarterback. And when Pittsburgh played their heavier people in this game to run the ball, it just really did not give Pickens as many snaps as what he's normally accustomed to.
All right, we'll look forward to that video. When will that be up?
It'll be an article because I think a video will be too tough to do, but okay. I'll have an article probably for the morning.
Okay. Defense.
Yeah, I mean, not that it's the main reason, but the video I did this morning on Steelers Depot was on Tyson Alualu. And I know we both love the guy, but his time is up. I mean, he's just really had a bad game. He's getting ragdolled by their right tackle, Caleb McGarry, in Atlanta. So, I mean, I don't know. I think I'm at the point where I would consider Carlos Davis over Tyson Alualu at this point.
Yeah. And we, in the arms of an angel, man. Look, I was the guy that after Alualu's first, I think it was first two seasons, I wondered if they should re-sign him. Mm-hmm. And because it was, you know, kind of, you know, a very uneven, not a lot of highs in there. Of course, a lot of it, I think, was at more as a pure defensive end, right? In base, a lot right. less nose stuff.
Yeah, because Hargrave was there.
Right. They re-signed him and made him more of a nose, you know, more of a defensive tackle, nose tackle type, kind of taking on that Hargrave role. And he really, really showed well. And then the injury hit last season. And he's not that guy anymore. And it's time. And what that time looks like, I think you talked about it on the live stream the other night there. Maybe you start promoting Carlos Davis in it. The only way you're not going to make Alualu inactive unless he's injured, unless you have somebody else not currently on the roster dressing and taking that spot, probably.
Right. Someone has to play this backup nose tackle rotational snaps.
And that's not likely to be a guy like Leal or Loudermilk.
No, Leal's too small and Lattimoke's too tall.
So that leaves you with a Carlos Davis type. So unless Alualu gets injured or unless they, you know, going to cut him outright, you know, or I mean, I suppose that you could elevate Davis a couple of games here and dress him that way. That's unlikely to happen unless there's an injury.
Well, that was my thought. I mean, that's the best way to do it, at least in the short term, and see how it looks.
Yeah. I doubt we're going to see it, though.
Yeah, I kind of doubt it too, but I think it's
unless
warranted.
There's an injury. Yeah, it is.
Anyway, I don't want to spend too much time because I know he's only playing, you know, 15 snaps a game, but just really a bad game for him, unfortunately. I mean, it's just, you know, he's 35. He's got a bunch of leg injuries. I mean, it's not unexpected, but still sad to see. Other thoughts for the defense? Again, just guys not getting off of blocks. Again, I don't think the assignments were bad. I don't think there weren't a lot of missed tackles in this game. It was just guys not getting off of blocks, guys right. not winning at the point of attack. overall. So that was kind of why the Falcons got their run game going.
Look, they got pushed off the ball in this one, I think.
Yeah, they did.
Especially in the second half there when and that's the byproduct of letting those teams hang around, that you know, if their identity is run the football, which Atlanta was, and doing so with Cordarrelle Patterson, they did that and they started to move downhill. I thought the tackling overall was fine. I don't imagine Josh Kearney's going to have a very long missed tackles type say. I thought coverage for the most part was okay. Marcus Mariota, make no mistake about it, he missed some throws in this game, right?
Oh yeah, Mariota was missing high all game
long. Right. I mean that happens sometimes though. And I thought the tackling was okay overall. And, you know, the big thing is they kept the points down on the scoreboard there. The sack was nicely done. You get Edmonds up in there in the A gap and kind of force the slide protection to their right. And that leaves Cameron Hayward and Alex Highsmith on that side to play a game, right?
Yeah, I mean, and Hayward was the crasher there, and he's the best guy at stunts in football, both as the crasher, to subtly and slyly hold the left guard to allow the looper in free, but this time he didn't even hold. He just crashed through and split the tackle and the guard and got through for the sack. So Hayward had a good game. The bull rush he had on the Minka interception to end things, that was a good play. I just had to laugh at, I think even Cam saw this, pre-snap Hayward switching that left leg, digging in the ground and just taking off, and Drew Dowman, that center, was really overwhelmed by Ogunjobi and Hayward in this game.
Man, can you imagine if this defense gets a 10-point lead or a 2-possession lead in the third or fourth quarter of a game?
I mean, at least against Atlanta, you know, Atlanta can't throw the football. So you were just trying to, if you could have just gotten a 2-possession lead in the second half, you know, you late in that game, you would have destroyed them.
Yeah. 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 That's so that what was I'm a tough getting part. At.
Right.
If they could, bury another one of these red zone, you know, trips of theirs instead of a field goal and get this thing in a situation. You know, Dick LeBeau always said, you know, the better, you know, the defense is always better. The better the offense is, because you get them in some of them predictable, you take them out of certain aspects of what they want to do. And basically was the thing with on that last play there that Minka intercepted. You know they're going to have to throw, right? And you know that they're, you know, you could just get it, you know, pin your ears back and get after them, and getting that motorcycle start like Cam Hayward, you can get after and you can impact the play that way. When you know what the offense is going to have to try to do, it makes it a lot easier to play defense, and the whole rushing coverage thing, yada yada, you know.
Right. It's funny. Literally the first time all game Atlanta had to throw, they throw an interception and the game's over. The very first time they have to throw the football, and everybody knows it. So, yeah, don't have a lot of thoughts defensively, just, you know, not winning the point of attack in the second half. Secondary, I thought, played well overall, got some late pressure and Minka called game.
Okay.
All right. I think we're getting a little bit short on time here. So any other final thoughts? George Pickens is speaking to the media now.
I don't think that went too well, did it?
It doesn't sound the best in the world, but apparently I'm reading this from Brooke Pryor. Can I edit my comments earlier in the show? Can you go back now? He says, let's
cover this. Cause this is, I have time. Where's my flag at?
Yeah. You have all kinds of time right now. I'm just reading some of the tweets here. I think we have a story going up on Depot by the time people listen to this, but Pickens, before we began talking to the media, he had this opening statement, apparently saying, quote, "Before we start this, I ain't going to be just saying stuff for you all to just paint a story and make a statement bigger than what it is, or make something bigger than what it is." So Pickens doesn't want to try to answer many questions about what happened, I think, to avoid that bigger story, which in itself will become a bigger story.
Okay. And what did I say? You know,
look, again,
if you're not going to address it after the game, you better damn sure address it on Wednesday, right?
Yeah, again, I was fine with him not talking after the game.
And look, I haven't heard this yet. I mean, we're reading. We don't have context here, so that's
right.
It's kind of unfair here. But it doesn't sound like this went too terribly well today. Man, just once again, I don't have a problem with him wanting the football. I just think that the way that this is being played out on the field and off the field right now is going to make this an even bigger story. And it when that happens, it becomes a distraction. And then he's going to get more upset. The fan, it's just going to snowball on him is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I get that. Like, I mean, I haven't heard all the comments today. I mean, I think ideally you would say today something to the effect of I got too emotional. I can't let that happen. I'm just a competitive guy and putting it past us and something like that would be the best thing to say. But I also understand at a baseline level, a guy getting mad in a football game, that happens all the time. I understand some of the bigger stuff. We're talking about the Colts game and having a similar conversation there, not to the frustration level or the yelling level, but just kind of a guy that needed to be talked to. But a guy getting mad in a game of football, any sport, it happens every single week. I think to Pickens' point, he's saying this stuff happens a million times. I don't want to feel like I'm singled out about just this one instance.
And look, he's a rookie, okay? I mean, he's a rookie.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a young kid. We call him a kid. He's literally a kid.
Right. I mean, let's do a few more things on the field before we start doing some of these things.
Sure, but to the point about him being a rookie, sometimes rookies don't handle those things the best because they're rookies and they're dealing with struggles maybe the first time in their career.
That's why I say you got to nip it in the bud.
Right. I mean, we'll see what happens. I think we'll see what happens the next time Pickens is struggling or not getting looks in a game, how he reacts.
All right. Everybody, just remember how I've kind of replied to all this along the way here because I don't want to be I told you so, but, you know, just remember.
Right. But I think the point is, and the point that I made is this will happen again with George Pickens. He'll have a dud of a game where he's getting three targets and for whatever reason, they're running the ball or just not getting the ball or being taken away. And he'll have to react better next time.
All right. Some emails.
Yep. Read emails and close out today's show. Just have time for maybe two or three.
All right. Ramon Angulo Garcia writes in, hey guys, this is not another fire Mike Tomlin. To be honest, LOL, even though I don't like his success the last few years, I know the Steelers do not fire coaches, but I have seen them not extending the ones that didn't perform good on their tenure. I think it's safe to say Tomlin wants to be coaching through his contract that runs through 2024 and beyond that. But do you guys think he is sure bet to get extended? I mean, do you see a scenario where we get to the start of 2024 without him getting extended? How do you see this unfolding? I'm assuming the team continues to lack success in the playoffs in 2022 and 2023. Look, I mean, here we are talking about, you know, right now, and as we said earlier in this show, this is a big game this week for the Steelers here. And one, you know, they're getting a little bit of a handicap on their side without out having to face Lamar. If this team somehow gets into the playoffs, and I still have my doubts that that will happen, but it's a lot more likely than it was a few weeks ago. Man, what do you say about Mike Tomlin if he gets his team somehow into the playoffs? And even if he doesn't, the whole narrative will go back. Well, he hadn't won a playoff game since 2016, and that's fine. I get that. But the fact that he gets his team into the playoffs would be quite tremendous. Here's the thing. Where we sit right now, from my opinion, Mike Tomlin has no plans on going anywhere. Now, obviously, his kids growing up and you know, that could obviously change things. But I've said this several times. I think Mike Tomlin loves every aspect of what he does and is doing right now. And it loves the draft process and everything about it with him is a Ritz cracker, I think. And I don't think the Steelers are close to even considering firing Mike Tomlin right now. So take all that for what you will.
Not something I think about much. As you said, I'm focused on Sunday. It's a big game Sunday. I think it's pretty likely there'll be an extension at some point for Tomlin. Assuming this team does not win a playoff game this year, I don't want to say they have to do it next year, but I feel like you got to be right in the mix of things, right? You can't, sure. If they don't win a playoff game next year, they'll have gone seven straight seasons right. without a playoff win. I mean, that is just unacceptable.
Right. That does not happen in Pittsburgh. Right.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. So much could change. I don't think Tomlin's in a hot seat right now or anything, but I understand as each year goes by and each year gets further away from just their last playoff win, let alone last actual Super Bowl run, et cetera, et cetera. It gets more and more frustrating.
Maybe we covered this the other day about TJ Watt coming back too soon. I think we covered that, right?
It sounds familiar. Yeah, it didn't come back too soon. The pec and the ribs are different things.
Right. Brian Tolini writes in, Davin AK, with the Steelers' newfound run game success, are you surprised defenses aren't focusing more on stopping our run game and making Kenny beat them? I mean, look, they're trying to stop the run.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen some signs of that. I think everyone recognizes they got a first round running, maybe a first round quarterback and a running back, but you know they're trying to run the ball. That's their how they're operating right now. But Pittsburgh's done a good job. I mean, they've just blocked it up well.
I forgot how much. I need to look how much single high teams played in this game.
I assume Atlanta did a fair amount because they're a single high team. Generally speaking, they played some too high, and when they do, Kenny checks runs. There was the first play of the game was a check too high to a run that got 6 yards.
So right. So I mean, it felt like they were doing all they could do to kind of stop the run.
Yeah, and when I mean Pittsburgh played a lot of heavy personnel, they played a lot of Hayward, a lot of Gentry, and so that always invites you know guys to defenses to stack the box. But Pittsburgh just ran the ball well.
Look, sit back and enjoy it, man. From where we were thinking, you know, where we thought there, where we knew this team was coming out of training camp to where they are right now. Now, look, I think continuity plays a whole hell of a lot, you know, time together, because once again, knock on wood, this is an offensive line that there's not many around the league right now that can say they've gotten the amount of snaps out of their initial starting five like the Steelers have.
Yeah, I mean, it's rare. I mean, are they the only team to have? Probably not, but how many teams have had their starting five start the entire season? I mean, it's probably count on one hand, I'm guessing.
I would imagine just over experience, if there's not many of them right now.
Right. So that's, as you said, I think that's a storyline not talked about enough, and it's a big reason for this team's improvement.
Sure.
I mean, plus, their depth is bad. They have no depth, and so they really cannot afford an injury to anybody.
True. And I mean, look, we haven't had to see, I mean, what has have guys like Trent Scott's come in and played a handful as like a tackle, and then obviously a handful more as kind of an extra tackle, but he hasn't had to play the guard.
Yeah, you remember his name, Jesse Davis. Yeah.
Yeah. Jesse Davis. And obviously Kendrick Green hadn't even been active for a game, but Jesse Davis, I don't think has even taken an offensive snap. Has he?
No, he's been left wing on field goals. He's been doing that every time he's played so little. Even now when I watch him, I think John LeGlue, because he's wearing that 77. So, right. I mean, yeah, but that's a good thing. I don't want Green playing. I don't want Trent Scott playing. I don't want Jesse Davis playing. So
Hossenhauer. Yeah.
And Hossenhauer's played some,
right. Played a little, but I mean, yeah, you know, but, look, hat tip to Mason Cole too. Like, you know, this is a guy that probably hasn't been healthy since training camp, right?
Yeah, definitely not. But he's a warrior.
All right. What else do we have? We time to wrap it up here.
Yeah, I think we're a little over time, but that's all right. Had a good conversation today. So we will come back Friday, hopefully with a Ravens beat writer and preview the Ravens game.
All right. In the meantime, man, congrats to Alex. Retweet that stuff of Alex out there from Good Morning Football this morning. That's quite an accomplishment there. Kudos to Alex. Good eye
it's,
on that.
It's just too much time on my hands. That's all it was. Thank you.
God blessed us to be able to do that, right?
That's true. Good point.
All right. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Cazorra. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit the ad-free button up right navigational bar. We will be back on Friday. Until then, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.